Because we've been talking about it all year. That's the story of Hakel. It's yesterday's Chumash, but it's kind of very, very relevant and important. It's something we focused on tremendously. So we're going to take the opportunity to study the few verses from this week's Torah portion, chapter 31. We're going to take a look at verse 12 and 13. So Moshe Rabbeinu tells Yeshua, beginning in the 10th verse, that at the end of the 7th year, when you're going to conclude this Shemitah year, it's going to happen in the festival of Sukkot, when all of the Jewish people will come, Leiroi says Pnei Hashem Alekecha, to, so to speak, see the face of Hashem, Bamokem Asher Yivchar, in the place that Hashem will choose. So then, Tikra Sateda Hazes, and this Torah should be read, and it should be done Neged Kol Yisrael, corresponding to all of Israel. And you do it ba'aznehem, you'll do it in their ears, so to speak. So first of all, the obvious question is, it says Tikra. Who is Tikra? Who is going to read this Torah? Neged Kol Yisrael. So Rashi says, Tikra es ha-Torah hazeis. This commandment is actually to Yehoshua. And the implicit problem with the scriptural parlance here is that tikra is singular. It should have said tikra'u. You should. Plural. Doesn't say it plural. Doesn't say tikra'u es ha-Torah hazeis. Usually when the Torah speaks to the Jewish people, going forward, futuristically, it will say, here's what you should do. The plural you. And here it's very singular. Tikra. You should. So from here, Rashi says, we see HaMelech HaYakira. Hashem is speaking to Yehoshua, who incidentally is going to have the status, the halachic status of a melech. And Tikra Sateir Azeis is a commandment to Yehoshua, singular, because HaMelech HaYakira, the monarch of the Jewish people, is the one who would read the words of the Torah. Mitchilas Eila HaDvarim, from the beginning of Moshe Rabbeinu's final sermon, which began on Rosh Chodesh Shvat, the beginning of the fifth book, what we sometimes refer to as Deuteronomy, Eila HaDvarim, and it includes the Parsha of Shema, the Parsha of Ahoyim Shomaya, Aser to Aser, which speaks about the tithes that have to be brought, as well as the blessings and the curses. And all of this is Kidei Issa B'Maseches Seita. All of this is talked about in the tractate, which is known as Seita. On page 41 there, the Torah tells us that the melech would be al bima shel eitz, on a platform built of wood, a temporary platform, shehaya oisem ba'azara, which was built in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, there are a lot of details of Hakel, which the Gemara in Seita talks about. Rashi doesn't quote those details. Why doesn't he quote them? Because they're not necessary to understand the pasuk. This one is necessary on a literal level because it says tikra. So the Torah wants to emphasize who is going to read in the singular. So therefore Rashi has to tell you. The Torah is talking about that one person, and that one person is the Melech Yisrael. Now HaTorah HaZeis, this Torah, from Rashi's perspective on a literal level, is referring to the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu just spoke. HaTorah HaZeis, this Torah that I spoke, this Torah that I have just been involved with sharing and instructing you with, which is the idea of Chumash Devarim. But there are other ways to understand this also. Different messages, maybe not on a pshuto, a literal level. For example, Rambam says in Laws of Chagiga, so the Laws of Holiday, where he talks about the mitzvah of Hakel, he says HaTorah HaZeis refers to Dafka Bilshoina, he says. It has to be read in its Hebrew original. The Loi Bilshoin Laz, not in a language of translation. So it's not so well known, but there were periods of time where most of the Jewish people did not speak Hebrew. Only the scholarly, the clerisy of the nation spoke Hebrew. And since this has to be done Neged Kol Yisrael, perhaps there would be an emphasis on everybody actually understanding what's being read. And instead it's HaTorah HaZeis. It's in Hebrew, not in any kind of translation. Because as we're going to learn, this is not so much an issue of understanding Torah, of studying Torah, because that wouldn't be the best setting for understanding or studying Torah with everybody together, where everybody understands or doesn't understand on different levels. We should have had people studying in appropriate classes, in the right grades, categorized in knowledge appropriate groups. But since we don't have that, since we have everybody coming together, the emphasis here is on the pure experience. Reading the Torah itself, what does it mean? Tikra Teira Zeis. Tikra, according to the Targum Yonasanitz, L'chol Yisrael. The emphasis is a singular reading, but the reading is done in a way which is all-inclusive. And as the Chizkuni emphasizes, based on what Rashi says, it was told to Yehoshua, but it was not about a Yehoshua mitzvah, it was a permanent mitzvah. It's just that whoever will occupy the position of Yehoshua going forward in the future will do this Neged Kol Yisrael. So that's verse 11, verse 10 and 11. And now we have the actual mitzvah, the famous word hakel. Here's where it shows up. And the actual mitzvah in the Torah, verse 12. Hakel, that's an imperative. It comes from the word kehilah, which means a congregation. Hakel is a verb. Hakel asam, gather the people. Ha'anoshim v'hanoshim v'hataf, the men, the women, and the children. V'gercha asher b'sha'orecha, and the proselyte, the convert, or literally the stranger, who lives in your gates. L'ma'an yishmu, in order that they will hear. U'l'ma'an yilmedu, in order that they will learn. V'yaru, and the result will be that they will revere or respect or be in awe of Es Hashem Elokeichem, of the Lord your God. V'shamru l'asos, this sense of awe and respect will thusly induce the reality of keeping or of watching or of respecting. L'asos kol divrei Torah zeis, to do all the words of this Torah. So let's take a look at this first on a literal Rashi level, and then we'll see if we can delve into it a little bit more deeply. So first of all, ha'anoshim. The anoshim's job is going to be, Rashi says, lilmait. So even though the Torah says first l'man yishmu, interestingly, according to Rashi, since yilmedu refers to the males, and yishmu, we're going to see in Rashi, refers to the women. It says v'hanoshim, it says l'shmaya. So interestingly, women are put first, just like it was at Matan Torah, that the woman came first. Here also in Hakel, the women are emphasized first. Yishmu l'man yilmedu. So Rashi says, and afterwards it says, ha'anoshim, ha'anoshim v'ataf. Previously, it's ha'anoshim, ha'anoshim v'ataf, and then it speaks of what they do. So it mentions ha'anoshim first, but the verb which is attributed to ha'anoshim, which is l'man yilmedu, comes second. And according to Rashi, the way we understand the different activities that are happening over here, in order that yishmu, in order that yilmedu, so the different activities are attributed to the different classes of people or different genders being mentioned. Ha'anoshim, Rashi says, which as the Mefarshim explain, have a chiyuv in Talmud Torah, are obligated in Talmud Torah. So their job is lilmait. They actually have to learn, can't just simply listen. But ha'anoshim, the woman's job is lishmaya, to hear it. And many have pointed out that women hear things on an emotional quotience, more of a hearing, an understanding heart, whereas for men it's more of a cerebral kind of thing. Men and women learn differently, and they hear differently, and they relate differently. And the Torah talks about that. Men is talked about as lilmaid, and the woman is talked about lishmaya. So then comes the question, if ha'anoshim is l'man yilmedu, and if ha'anoshim, if the men are there for the activity called yilmedu, if the women are there for the activity called yishmu, but you mentioned hataf, you mentioned the children, and the taf could mean even babies. Rashi doesn't qualify that it means children who understand something. The Ramban does, but Rashi doesn't. And since Rashi attributes the idea of lilmaid to anoshim, and lishmaya to noshim, so then what are the taf doing? There is no other word over here. We only have two words that describe what's happening, what people are doing. One is yishmu, one is yilmedu. We have three classes of people identified. We have the male gender, we have the female gender, we have the yilmedu, we have the yishmedu. Rashi attributes them. But what happens to the taf then? from Rashi's way of perspective, Rashi's way of explaining, the Tafa left out. So he says, okay, so the Lama Bo, why did they come? If they're not supposed to necessarily be Yishmu or Yilmedu, and then afterwards it says V'yaru. Are the Taf going to be V'yaru? The Taf are going to revere? It would seem that V'yaru follows the Yishmedu, Yishmu and the Yilmedu. Since it says the word Lama'an. Lama'an means in order. In order that Yishmu, they will listen. Which doesn't mean just listen, it means to understand. Lama'an, Yilmedu, they will learn, meaning they'll grasp. And then it says V'yaru. It doesn't say Ulama'an Yaru. So therefore Rashi says, Lama Bo, why did they come? So he says, the truth is they did not come for themselves, per se. Losseis schar l'mivieihim. The mitzvah of the parents was to bring the children. And as the Gemara in Chagiga says, when the children come, that enhances the experience of the parents. So contrary to what people would intuitively think, if the kids are there, there's noise, and you can't listen, and you can't understand, the Torah says not so. When the children will be there, that will create the perfect experience. That will enable the Yilmedu and the Yishmu. Because as said, this is not your typical learning. This is not your typical listening. It's not intuitive to have everybody there if you want to listen. You should have everybody quietly gathered in a specific way if you want to just listen. If you want to learn, it should be conducive to learning. This is not ideal for either listening or learning. What's it ideal for? It's ideal to create an atmosphere. So it enhances, it enriches the experience of the parents because they brought their children. That means lasse schar. Lasse schar doesn't just mean to get reward. Every mitzvah has a reward for it. Lasse schar means that it's enriched. It's a more rewarding experience. Why was the hakel? Why is it emphasized by Makim Hasher Yivchar? The Torah said it has to be in a specific place. So the Alshach says something meridik. He says it has to be in the place where Hashem will choose, which we know means the Beis HaMikdash, the Azar of the Beis HaMikdash, because there's an obvious question, how will everybody hear? You're talking about an area larger than the size of a football field, and there was no amplification available. And I don't even know if amplification was allowed, even if they would have had microphones. Who says they'll be able to use it? That's artificial. If you're listening to a microphone, you're not hearing the words being read. You're hearing an electronic impulse. It sounds like the words, but it's not really the words. You cannot hear the Megillah with a microphone, even though it's not Shabbos, and you're allowed to use a microphone. You can't hear. You certainly can't hear Tekiah Shofar in a way that's artificially amplified. You're not hearing the Shofar. So how did they do this? How did that happen? So the Alshach says that's the point. Because it's going to be b'mokem asher yivchar, because it'll be in that specific place, the children will be there, and there'll be massive crowds, and there'll be anything but what's conducive to listening or learning, and yet everybody will hear. How? In Beis HaMikdash. Miraculous. So we have it in a miraculous place where the hagbolas, where the limitations of teva, of nature, don't necessarily apply. As we know, the Mishnah and others tells us there was asar nisin nasul aveseinu the Beis HaMikdash. There was 10 ongoing, regular miracles on a regular day going on in the Beis HaMikdash. So it was a place where the laws of nature were necessarily suspended. Now Ramban says that the reason we bring children is in order that the children, they will get it. They'll know they were in a place. They'll know they had some kind of experience. They don't maybe understand the words of the Torah. They can't really listen to the words of the Torah, but they know they were there. And because they know they were there, and because they have a memory of what happened there, so these children are going to ask. They'll ask their parents and say, so why did we go there? And the parents will convey to them the atmosphere of what Hakel was like. And in doing so, because the child will ask, the child will be answered. And that, of course, is the best method of education. That's what we try to do on Pesach night. We stimulate the child's questions. Because it's not a monologue then. The parents are not just simply reading or telling the children something. The children are engaged. So this engages them. It begins a process. And once you engage them and you begin a process, that's how the children will learn. Incidentally, since it says Laman Yishmu, the Gemara, which doesn't necessarily attribute the different activities to different genders, says that a person, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Hakel, would have to hear, literally. And if a person was deaf, hearing impaired, they would not be obligated in Hakel. The ability to hear is necessarily required. Which is interesting, because that's telling us that the mitzvah of Hakel specifically is to be able to hear. To physically hear, At the same time, Al-Sheikh is telling us it was like a miracle. It wasn't a natural hearing. So probably the explanation is, you have to be able to hear. How Hashem makes that, that's already another story. But you have to be able, you have to do your part, come to the Beis HaMikdash with the ability to hear, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu fills in the rest.
Not like the Megillah?
Not like the Megillah, or Tekiya Shofar, which is biblical.
Right.
Somebody who's hearing impaired who can't hear, with the Pashtos, you will be exempt. Somebody who doesn't have hands, can't put a tefillin on his hands. You can't. The Sepharno favors a different approach. He says, it doesn't say, if it would say that the Anashim are supposed to learn and the Anashim are supposed to listen, then it should have said, Hakilas Ha'am Lilmeid, Ba'anashim Lishmaya. It should have said this in the Torah clearly. And the order is reversed. It says first Ha'anashim, first the men, then it says afterwards the Anashim. And then it says, Laman Yishmu, Ulaman Yilmudu. And Rashi says that Yishmu refers to the woman and Yilmudu refers to the men, then it should have said it in the order of the Pasuk. Ha'anashim, it should have said Laman Yilmudu. Ha'anashim, the woman, Laman Yishmu. So therefore, the Sepharno favors a different approach. He says that Yishmu, that listen, is referring to the greatest of sages, the people who understand it best. So maybe we're talking to 5% of the population, people who really know what's going on. They will listen carefully. And then what will they do? As a result, Yilmidu, they will teach this afterwards to those who didn't understand. So this kind of follows, in a way, the Ramban's approach of people who will be present, who will know something happened, will not necessarily understand, will ask questions, and will learn afterwards. The Rebbe once told a story that when he was a boy, Erev Pesach, so the firstborns are supposed to fast. So somebody brought a baby, firstborn baby. So other people were not so happy about the baby making noise. And somebody said to the father who brought the baby, what, he understands the siyum? He understands the Masechet, the end of the tractate? So the man answered back, and all these people, they do understand. In other words, sometimes you have a child, of an infant, literally, and sometimes you have somebody who is infantile. So the same kind of thing. There's a Sepharno saying, just like the Ramban says, that the infants will ask questions, Sepharno says, yes, and the euphemistic infants, those who are infantile in their learning of Torah, who don't understand, will ask from those who do understand. That's where we have the different expressions of Laman Yishmu and Laman Yilmudu. So according to the Sepharno, Yishmu refers to a much higher way of learning, a much higher way of grasping. It's like you explain something to somebody, it says, you hear what I'm saying? In yeshiva jargon, it's very common. You hear? So you hear it means to really get it. That's like we turn in the parlance of chassidus, it means bina, to understand something in a profound way. Yilmidu is to grasp it. A person grasps something quickly, but yishmu is to really get it, to really understand it. So this is the way we understand the mitzvah of Hakel, and the result of Hakel is that this should be the sense of awe and the sense of reverence. And the pasuk finishes off that the children who did not know, Bnei Mashallah Yadu, they will in the end Yishmu, Vilamdu, they will listen and they will learn to fear, to revere Hashem Alekechem, Kol Hayamim, all the days, Asheratem Chayim Al Ha'adamah, that you will be upon the land of Israel, in the land which you're going to cross the Jordan and go into. In other words, verse 13 is telling us that this is the secret of Jewish survival. When you will create this periodic convocation that will reflect, as Rambam says, the events at Mount Sinai, this is a reenactment of Har Sinai, all the people, Anoshim, Noshim, Vataf, the Melech Yisrael will read. It's not just a question of them learning Torah, but having this experience. So experientially, when they participate in something grand and something national that's focused around the Torah, around Jewish leadership, the result will be that the Jewish people will be able to prosper. Even the ones who didn't know, even the ones who didn't hear or didn't learn, they too will have a sense of awe, they too will have a sense of reverence for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Sepharno actually explains it in that way. He says because they'll keep asking questions. You do a major event, that major event has many, many after effects. It's not just what happens at the event itself. People continue to ask, people continue to discuss. Hakel is not only the moment of Hakel, but Hakel has a very, very wide reverberation. that continues on afterwards. And in the end result is Yilmudu Yiras Hashem, that you will come to a sense of deeper awe, of deeper reverence, and they will be able to enter into a profound relationship with Hashem. As the Al-Sheikh explains, that this, when you do this mitzvah, you will merit to have a next generation engaged. That, of course, is the secret to survival. How do we get the next generation engaged? And what's the answer? The answer is Hakel. It's Hakel. So really, that's our secret to survival. Our secret is to be able to gather us together as a nation on a regular basis, and in doing so, that creates the impetus and gives us the strength to be able to go forward. Now, it's no secret that the Rebbe believed that we have to do a reenactment of Hakel in our own small way. And that the Rebbe said that during a year of Hakel, every one of us has to make every effort possible to be able to gather the Jewish people together, not in its literal iteration, meaning get the most recognized Jew or the most important leader to gather all the Jewish people together somewhere, because that would be a reenactment of the Beis HaMikdash. We're not allowed to do that. But we should do it in a mini way, in a small way, a minor way. And here is an interesting insight into Hakel, into the mechanism of how the Hakel works, who's responsible for Hakel, and perhaps we can understand how this works in our day and age. And let me add that even though the year of Hakel has ended, and we're in a new year now, the first day after Rosh Hashanah, the first thing we learned about in yesterday's Chumash was Hakel. That's the first Chumash after Rosh Hashanah, the new year. It's the actual Psukim of Hakel, number one. And number two, we know that everything follows an annual cycle. So whenever there's a Jewish holiday, there's an anniversary of something, it sets in motion a reality that continues for a full year. And then you get a new download. But everything in Judaism, in Torah, everything goes on an annual basis. Rachman al-Litzlan in a bad way, the mourning for a parent, it's a full year. It's not 12 months, there's this idea of a till the yard site, so to speak. There's this annual kind of reality. And the same thing is also true with regard, in a good way, a chasn and kala, that a special halacha is about a couple that gets married. So it's a full year, it's called Shana Rishayna. So when did the Hakel actually take place? On Sukkos. So when does the year end then? On Sukkos. On the first day of Sukkos. So we still have the residual Hakel energy and activity which is applicable. So here in the Biurim book, on page Kuf Samach Zayin, and Zimin Yud Zayin, the Rebbe quotes Rashi, who quoted the Gemara in Seita, saying, HaMelech HaYokeda, the king would read. And we talked about the need for Rashi to share this, even though he doesn't share other details, which I talked about in Masechet Seita, because it's specifically at this juncture where it says Tikra in the singular that we have to find out who is the Tikra. Who? Does it say Tikra'u? Who is the Tikra? So the Rebbe says, one second, Yesh Lishol, we may ask here, Madua mizbatzas kriyas ha-teira b'maymet hakel. Why is it that the reading of Torah, under the conditions of hakel, why does that happen? Ayidei ha-melech. Why does that happen through the king, who is hamanhig hamedini, who is the political leader? He's the national leader of the Jewish people. Ha'im loimasim yeser shahadavi yaseh ayidei hanhoga haruchnias v'ateironis. Would it not be more appropriate that this be done by the spiritual leadership? After all, it's reading of Torah. So if it's not a political event, and we aren't reading about the state of the nation, but we're reading about the Torah itself, so wouldn't it make more sense to have the person who is tasked with Torah leadership read from the Torah, rather than political leadership?
That's if you buy into church and state should be separate.
Well, it's not a question of buying into church and state separate, it's a question of reality. The reality was that there were times that for the Jewish people, the Melech was also the leader on a Torah level, like David HaMelech, for example. And there were times where it wasn't. For Chizkiyahu's times, perhaps it was like that. And when it came to a king like Yoyosh, it was definitely not like that. And nonetheless, the mitzvah would be on the Melech Yisrael. So you can't say that it's a question of whether we believe that church and state should be separated or shouldn't be separated. That's less of the question. The question is, who is naturally or intuitively going to be the Torah leader? And the answer is, it depends. Sometimes yes, Melech. Sometimes no, Melech. But when you put emphasis on the political leadership, that means when it is the Torah leadership, or when it's not the Torah leadership, the emphasis here is on the political leadership. And the person who's technically in charge of the country. Whereas if you had said that it was the head of the Sanhedrin, the Nasi, who Rambam says is b'mkayim Moshe, he stands in, so to speak, for Moshe Rabbeinu, then in that case, you should have just said Nasi. And if it would be David HaMelech, then you know he's the Nasi of the Sanhedrin. And if it's not a David HaMelech, well then, whoever it's going to be, the leader of the Sanhedrin, or the Av Beth Din, or somebody like that, the Chief Justice. Yishloimar, the Rebbe suggests that Hezber Lekach Tomun B'Divri HaRambam, that the answer to this is actually tucked into the words of the Rambam in Hilchos Chagiga. There in the third chapter where he talks about Hakel, he says, Va'afilu Chachamim G'dolim, even the great sages, Shayedim Kol HaTorah Kula, they know the whole Torah, Chayavim Lishmaya B'Chavana G'dolu Yaseida, they must listen very intently, very, very carefully, very profoundly, they have to listen. Why is this? Shalekava HaKosov El L'Chazek Dasa Emes, the Torah did not say, everybody gather together so that you will learn Torah. The Torah said, everybody gather together so you will strengthen the structure of Yiddishkeit. This is about strengthening Yiddishkeit. This is about Jewish survival. This is not about having a profound learning experience. This is not an intellectual journey. This is not a cerebral voyage. This is an issue of creating an atmosphere and an event that has a residual spillover, namely of strengthening. That's what it's about, strengthening the nation. The result is not wiser or smarter people. The Yira Atzmai, he should see himself, says Rambam, Kilo Atan Etztaveba, as if now the Torah is being commanded all over. He's hearing it from, so to speak, the mouth of the might, which is a euphemism for Hashem. Shahamelech Shaliachu Lahashmiya Divrei Hakel. The Melech is only a Shaliach. He's only an agent, an emissary. It's not about him. It's what he represents. He is simply, he's empowered, he's tasked with assembling the people and telling them the words of Hashem. Kiloimar, in other words, Mataros HaShokriyazu, the purpose of this reading, Eina Kedei Lil Ame Desa'am Torah. It's not to teach the people Torah. Sharegam Mishi Yedei Kvaras HaTorah Mukhliv La'azim La. The person who knows the whole Torah also has to listen. What's he going to learn? What's he going to learn from the Melech who's going to read? And he's reading at the same time as small children also. The answer is he's not going to learn. So it's not just a cerebral learning experience. It's an experiential experience. The matara of this kriya is la'oyrer es ha-kesher apnimi. The purpose of this reading, or of this atmosphere that was created, is to awaken the deeper and more mystical bond, the spiritual bond, shebein kol Yehudi ben ha-Torah, that exists latently, but exists between every yid and between the Torah. And this, when we talk about that kesher, it's a kesher sha'akel shavim bay. Everybody has that connection equally. G'doyl ha-chachamim, the greatest of the wise, and Pashat Shebepshutim, the simplest of people. Everybody has that connection. So we're talking about awakening an intrinsic connection. V'lochein, therefore, since it's not a question of profound intellectual discourse, it's not an issue of understanding something in a deep way, but rather being there and having the core essence of your neshama, so to speak, provoked or awoken, so that you will participate in a united fashion with all of the Yidden in this special moment, in special circumstances. It's not done by the wise people of Torah, by the great teachers, who will represent various dimensions or levels or gradations within the understanding of Torah. No, who does it? Dafka al yedei ha-melech. It's specifically the melech, which the melech is said, that Rambam himself says in Hilchos Melachim, is lev kol kahal Yisrael. He represents the heart, not the brain, the heart of the Jewish people. Hama'ached esam kule. What does the heart do? The heart pumps blood to the entire body. The heart keeps you going. It keeps everything fresh and vibrant. The job, the task of the king is to unite the people. Everybody is equally subservient to the king. He's the king. Whatever he says is law. So therefore, since everybody is subservient, it's not a question of whom he's able to capture their imagination or who he could inspire with his words, so therefore they become subservient. It's a question of who really is subservient. Who is subservient? Everybody's subservient equally. So that's the person that's supposed to bring all the people together, and that's the person that's able to create Hakel. So perhaps we could understand or add that the mitzvah of Hakel then, it's not about who's wisest, and it's not about how to explain something on a very profound level. It's about being able to unite the people. So seemed to me that when the Rebbe talked about hakel, and he said about everybody being a hakelizer, or somebody who brings people together, we're not talking about, first of all, I'm not a big chacham. I don't know a lot of Torah. I'm not very wise. How am I should be a teacher? Why should I do that? The answer is, it's really not about the teaching. It's about bringing your circle of influence together. And when you bring your circle of influence together, and when you share with them words of Torah, that has an effect of awakening something intrinsic, of reconnecting a yid with the Torah, and in doing so, it enables our continued survival. L'chaim.